But we're going to start this morning by discussing Shannon Airport, because as reported in the online website The Clare Herald, a document has been circulated amongst company workers outlining plans, it seems, by Aer Lingus to not resume US flights from Shannon until 2022. The Boston and New York flights have been cancelled since early on in the pandemic, while in March of this year, 129 in-flight and ground staff were temporarily laid off by the company and placed on the PUP for 3 months. They're due to return next month, but of course, as we heard earlier in the week from Shannon Group CEO Mary Considine, a lack of clarity for the aviation market means it's very difficult for airports, airlines and others to plan for the near and mid-term future. During that interview, which we broadcast on Tuesday morning, we also asked, or I also asked Mary Considine for her understanding of Aer Lingus' commitment to Shannon Airport. This is what we heard on Tuesday.
All the indications from Aer Lingus is that they're awaiting the lifting restrictions, and they're hoping to be back in Shannon on both the UK and Transatlantic once we get clarity.
Okay, because obviously that was raised recently by Clare County Council, but it again speaks to your need for decisions to come from government, from Dublin, to allow for clarity, to allow you and airlines and your partners make plans.
Absolutely. Like, there's no doubt but 2021 will be another difficult year for aviation and tourism after a very, very difficult and challenging 2020. But I think there is an opportunity now. There is public health, thankfully, the predict, you know, things are looking much, much more positive there. So we are hoping that with the right measures and the restart plan put in place, that we will see a resumption of international travel later on in the summer. And that is really critical, because we need to bring back that key connectivity for both business and tourism, and indeed all the jobs, you know, in the airport and in this region reliant on that.
That's Mary Considine there, the CEO of Shannon Group. Now, this morning, as we've reported in our news, on these reports that Aer Lingus may not resume transatlantic services until next year, we've spoken with sources in the SIPTA trade union. They say they're looking to discuss the matter with the airline during, as part of regular or periodic meetings that they hold. They are looking for clarity on the airline's plans for this summer so that staff, i.e. their members, can be briefed. We invited Aer Lingus to give us that clarity. They issued a short statement to Clare FM last evening. Aer Lingus is currently flying a significantly reduced schedule, they say. The schedule for the duration of 2021 and beyond remains under constant review. Clare Independent TD Michael McNamara is on the line. Deputy McNamara, good morning to you.
Good morning, Gavin.
Thank you very much for joining us. How concerned are you?
Well, obviously I'm very concerned for a variety of reasons. You know, I'm concerned generally about Shannon Airport and in and out of Shannon, because it has obviously almost completely ceased. But I'm also concerned particularly about Aer Lingus, because of, you know, there's a historical lack of commitment to Shannon in a way. I mean, it's, you know, well documented that if there was a problem with a flight serving either Boston or New York from Dublin, that the Shannon flight would be sacrificed to provide the Dublin flight, you know, if there was a problem with a plane or...
That has happened on numerous occasions, yeah.
It's happened on numerous occasions. So, I mean, clearly Dublin is a priority and for Aer Lingus, and has been even before its privatisation. And lastly, I mean, Mary Considine has been quite clear and has repeated on numerous occasions that it's going to be a very challenging time for Shannon Airport when aviation resumes, because airlines are going to prioritise the bigger airports and the more guaranteed markets over other airports, and in Ireland that's Dublin. So I mean, you know, I would be very concerned that you might see a prioritisation of Dublin over the other over Shannon.
Do you have any sympathy for Aer Lingus in that they are trading through extraordinary times?
Oh, absolutely.
But Shannon may be a victim of that.
Absolutely, I do. I mean, like, and sorry, it's not just limited. I mean, the whole IAG group, of which Aer Lingus is part, along with Iberia and British Airways, has said that their airlines are going to be operating at 25% capacity in this quarter, and that's across the group. So, I mean, of course I do. But I do think that, you know, that's right across the world. So, I mean, there's absolutely no doubt but that the aviation sector is very severely impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic everywhere. But I think the situation is being made more difficult for the aviation sector in Ireland by some of the measures that the government have adopted, and in particular the lack of clarity around when there will be a reopening and what that reopening will entail, whether it will entail flights within the European Union only, whether it will entail flights to other countries, third countries like the United States, if so, under what conditions, and what will be done to reopen safely. Because, you know, I've been calling for testing at airports for 12 months now.
Yes.
There was finally some PCR testing was introduced. But, I mean, PCR testing is by its nature quite slow. It's obviously the gold standard. But it's not perhaps suited for rapid testing. Antigen testing is the one favoured for that, and we had we see lots of other countries moving forward with antigen testing to help open up more safely. And we saw the Professor Ferguson, who led a government report into antigen testing. There was a split. I think there were six people on the panel, and it was 4-2 with the two Department of Health personnel against it, and all of the other independent experts in favour of it, including Kingston Mills, who's quite regularly, I think, on the he's a commentator who's spoken in favour of it. I think Professor Paddy Mallon, who would be, I think, in general considered to be quite a cautious voice. He's a professor of immunology, or at least infectious diseases, at UCD, and also a consultant in St. Vincent's. But he has spoken in favour of it and believes that it offers a lot of benefits. But notwithstanding that report in favour of antigen testing, we've seen very little progress to roll out antigen testing in the country other than in the context of meat plants. That's, I think, remains, you know, needs to be explained by the government. I mean, if you get a report, if you commission experts to provide a report, I mean, we're constantly being told, well, we need to listen to the experts. But, you know, I think sometimes we need to listen to the experts when we like what they're saying. But when the government doesn't like what they're saying, or when the Department of Health, or when certain agendas within the Department of Health don't like what the experts are saying, well, then they don't listen to them. And this is one instance of that. So I do think that we need to put a plan in place. I'm not saying that everything is going to open up overnight. It's very clear it won't, but we do need to have a plan in place as to what the Irish state's position on aviation is going to be when it looks.
And do you take any solace from? I mean, yesterday Deputy Crowe was talking about how Ireland would be keen to sign up and quick to sign up for the digital passports, for example, and perhaps he's suggesting within 6 weeks we could see some movement on that front.
Well, I mean, I heard Simon Coveney, who's the Minister for Foreign Affairs, on RTE the evening before, and I thought he was a lot more circumspect. So I hope that Ireland will sign up to that, because I think we are a member, obviously, of the European Union. There's so much fuss about Brexit, and now it's almost forgotten when the government is planning its next responses to COVID-19 that we are members of the European Union. And of course, every other country in the European Union is grappling with exactly the same issues that we are. And so I do think that I would like to see them move in conjunction with other EU member states in terms of the digital green pass, which might enable
move quickly as well.
Well, move as quickly as other countries are moving. I mean, not move more quickly than other countries are moving, but move as quickly. And secondly, then, with regard to whatever decisions are made with regard to opening up to travel for other countries outside the European Union, which are determined to be relatively safe, such as the United States, because of the high levels of vaccination, that we move in that front as well. Because, obviously the other airlines that serve the transatlantic routes at Shannon have also pulled out. And I think we do need to get transatlantic flights back into Shannon as soon as possible. And we need to get flights to Heathrow back into Shannon as soon as possible, because they have been...
Sorry to cut across you. I was just going to say, on that point, I just note, you mentioned IAG, the parent company of Aer Lingus. They reported their Q1 financial results this morning. They've got a pretty steep financial loss in that period, unsurprisingly. But I also note the Irish Times reporting that they drew down 75 million out of an agreed 150 million euro debt facility provided by the Irish state during the first 3 months of the year. We don't own a share in Aer Lingus anymore, of course, but if the state is providing such significant significant funding to the company. Should that not come with strings attached to it? We look after you, but you must look after and maintain your services in our airports.
Well, I mean, I suppose the way to do that was through taking an equity share. I mean, that's what Germany did. I mean, they put significant sums of money into Lufthansa, but in return for putting those sums of money in, they took an equity share in Lufthansa. Now it's a share that they intend to sell off as the aviation sector pulls out of this lump. But we didn't. I mean, that's an approach that I would have suggested to government, and I don't think it was unique in that. But it's one that the government, for reasons best known to itself, decided not to adopt. But I would agree with you that if you're going to give significant sums of money to a sector, you would expect that it comes with some conditionality. But you know, the Irish example isn't a great one. I mean, we put vast sums of money into banks not very long ago, and you know, we see now how they're treating their public service obligations in places like Tulla and Milton Malbay in particular. I mean, obviously they're retaining an ATM in Kiki, but I mean, retaining an ATM, you would imagine, is not a huge amount to expect a bank to do in circumstances where they were bailed out by the Irish state.
And certainly doesn't amount to a branch.
History repeats itself. No, I'm not suggesting it does amount to a branch.
Of course, yeah.
But it's a lot better than not having an ATM. Okay. So, I mean, like, these are small things, but if we can't achieve that in the banking sector, where we have control, you know, banking licenses are strictly controlled. The governor of the central bank is supposed to be notified of any plans, and notwithstanding all of that sort of infrastructure in place, we're not able to get banks to do something as simple as provide an ATM. I mean, I do think that the government needs to take a look at how society is regulated in Ireland and how the economy is regulated and what tools are available to it to regulate, because it's been a very kind of hands-off approach up to now.
Okay. Just briefly then, in terms of Aer Lingus going forward, it seems the most strident calls that have been made at the minute are for clarity from the airline. Is that now what is needed in your view?
With clarity from the airline and clarity from government. Both. I mean, the airline will say that they can't provide clarity until the government provides clarity. Now, I completely accept that there's a pandemic and it's unpredictable, and the government, you know, with the best of intentions, could announce certain dates and not be able to meet them for objectively verifiable reasons to do with case numbers, etc. I accept that, but I mean, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be making concrete plans and laying out those plans. And the airlines in return could and should be expected to lay out plans in response to that.
Okay. Just before I let you go, I wanted to ask you as well this morning for your own views on the policies that are being pursued by government to tackle not just these cuckoo funds buying houses, but also making more affordable housing available, taking an equity in share in people's home, ironically, after what we were just talking. Do you think that is the way to go to unlock the potential for more people to get onto the housing ladder?
Yeah, I mean, look, the cuckoo funds coming in to build houses, I don't have a problem with, but coming in to buy houses that have already been built and therefore taking them off the market that ordinary people can hope to aspire to is a huge problem. But, you know, in a way, our local authorities have done the same thing. I mean, for a long time, Clare County Council and every other local authority, this isn't a criticism of Clare County Council in particular, were going out into the market and buying houses for the past 10 years, effectively, primarily buying houses instead of building houses. And of course, for every house they buy, that's a house that a young couple or a young person or a young family can't bid on, because obviously they're not going to be able to outbid Clare County Council. So we have a general problem in Ireland with nobody's building houses, everybody's looking to buy houses, including these investment funds and including local authorities. We do need to return to, I think, local authorities building houses on local authority land. And one of the few achievements maybe of the government that I supported from 11 to 16 was that local authority lands and state lands weren't sold. I mean, there was huge pressure when the country was in the economic hole it was to sell off state-owned land, but that land was retained. It can now be built on. It's there to be built on if we put a strategy in place. We were, you know, housing estates were built in Scariff, built in every single, there isn't a town in Clare that housing estates weren't built on when the country had a lot less money available to it than it does now. So I do think we need to get back into the business of building houses.
We need the private sector to contribute, though, as well.
I said that at the start.
Yes, you did. I suppose the reason I just point that out is because, yes, we need to build houses, but what I'm I suppose the big question is, will giving people access to a state leg up as they try to get a mortgage, will that, do you feel, ultimately see the private sector deliver more supply?
But I mean, there's a danger in that, that you end up with the state subsidising a private sector, that you end up artificially raising, if that is the only mechanism in place, there's a danger that you end up artificially raising the price of houses because the private sector know that this money is available. In the same way that, for example, you know, every time the government announce some payments for beef farmers in return for bad prices, the factories pull prices further because they know that, well, the farmers are getting this amount of money, so we can factor that in what we're paying. I mean, there's a danger that you have big international funds factoring in what the government are going to be giving people into the price that they're going to be charging for houses. And of course, then you have the government also through the various rental schemes paying state money inevitably to these private sector funds for the rental of those houses. So I don't have a problem with the private sector. Obviously, a lot of houses in Clare are built privately, and that's a good thing. People who are able to afford to buy a site or have a site and are able to persuade a bank to give them a mortgage and proceed and build a house, that's a good thing. Funds likewise doing something similar but on a bigger scale, but there has to be public sector housing as well. I mean, it's not one or the other, I don't think, is the solution. It's a combination of both, and we've been overly reliant on the private sector.
And we know you expressed your own unease at the actions of Cuckoo Funds buying housing estates that are being built or buying them off the plans. The government, on the foot of the reports of recent days, look set to act to tackle this. But can I just ask you, and I'm going to put you on the spot here, I know, but as a barrister, is that legal for them to ban Cuckoo Funds from buying estates? The state, the Constitution enshrines the right to private property.
It does, and that's something I don't have an answer to off the top of my head. You'll forgive me for that.
But, no, I mean, of course.
One thing we need to make sure is that they don't have, because, you know, ordinary people don't get huge tax incentives for buying a house, and we need to make sure that Cuckoo Funds aren't getting huge tax incentives, and it would be perfectly illegal to remove any artificial tax incentives that were put in place. Now,
that needs to be done quickly, I presume.
And that needs to be done very quickly, and I think that's, I mean, if there's a distortion of the market by the tax treatment of these funds that rewards them for doing exactly that which they're doing, and it's damaging to Irish society and the Irish economy in a broader sense, then that needs to be tackled quickly. I mean, the issue of, I mean, they're doing it because it's profitable, and they're doing it because they obviously can turn a book on it. I mean, they're not doing it because of any particular attraction to Ireland. I mean, these are international funds, so it's all down to what incentives are in place. And I think the government needs to look at the tax system in the first instance, and then you know, there might be no need to ban them if they weren't getting artificial tax incentives. And I'm not, you know, that's something that the constitutionality, would you forgive me, but it's something that would require one to look into in a lot greater detail.
No, it's just, I know, I appreciate I'm putting you on
but
the spot.
But there's absolutely no constitutional, there's nothing to prevent any artificial tax incentives. Just as, you know, private individuals, there was an incentivization to buy houses in certain, was it section 20, I've forgotten section, you know, it was during the Celtic early years, the Celtic Tiger, was it section 22 or section 20, whatever, but that was ultimately removed. I mean, tax incentives can be removed without any constitutional difficulty.
Okay. Deputy McNamara, I appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks very much, Kevin. Thank you.
Take care. All the very best. Bye-bye. Michael McNamara there, Clare Independent TD.